Why are so many dogs suffering from health issues? Actress Katherine Heigl, who's helped save over 16,000 dogs through her foundation, says she's seeing more issues with dogs' joints, odors, and health than ever before. And after doing a ton of research, she feels there's one place we can look to support any dog's health: their food. So she decided to create something she could actually feel good about feeding her dogs. It's called Superfood Complete. Superfood Complete is made with over 30 of the healthiest ingredients on the planet, including several superfoods vital to your dog's health. Badlands Ranch also sponsors the Jason Debus Heigl Foundation, which has helped rescue thousands of dogs and place them in loving homes. Dogs across America are trying this food and experiencing amazing health benefits. Go to badlandsranch.com/save50 and order right now to get up to 50% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. If you want your dog to experience all these incredible things, go to badlandsranch.com/save50 today.
Medical Mutual wants to remind you it's almost time for Medicare's annual enrollment period. As a trusted health insurer for more than 90 years, Medical Mutual is here to help you find better Medicare benefits. Be confident you're getting the most from your Medicare Advantage plan. Schedule your free Medicare plan review today at medmutual.com/review. Medical Mutual, Ohio's hometown Medicare insurer.
Welcome back to another episode of Open Floor, filling in for your host, Michael the Pod Pina. I'm Rohan Narkany, joined today by the host of the SI Weekly podcast, a returning host here on Open Floor. This is Max's third time's the charm, Three's Company. Please welcome back John Gonzalez. John, how's it going, buddy?
Repeat offender. I like to be here. This is starting to feel comfortable. I'm putting my feet up on the couch.
You're
making
doing
myself at home.
It might be comfortable for you. It's a little uncomfortable for me. People are listening to this, but John's head is like in the lower one third of his camera right now. And it's there we go. That's a much more.
How's that? Is that better?
Natural. Yeah, it's much more. Now I think my voice is immediately at ease now. The
right,
tension
fantastic.
Is gone. John, I'm
luckily
actually
it's an
really,
audio medium.
Yes. Really excited to have you on the show today for many reasons, but first and foremost being last night, I patronized local South Florida Coral Springs Institution Wings Plus for dinner.
Nice.
Been going there for many, many years. Really, all you need to know about Wings Plus is they have a lot of photos of the time George Bush and Dick Cheney visited the restaurant up. Still up in the restaurant. But, you know, it's a local spot. And they serve a jerk chicken Philly cheesesteak. And
wow.
that's what I had to eat last night. I got it as a wrap. A delicious food, but I wanted to ask you, as our Minister of Philadelphia Propaganda, how do you feel about kind of the PCEU, as I like to call it, the Philly Cheesesteak Extended Universe, where this, you know, I've been to Ishkabibbles, I've seen people order the chicken Philly, but how do you feel about the expanded, you know, it seems like people will Philly cheesesteak anything these days. You know what I'm saying? How do you feel about that? The extended thing people are doing. You know, you can get it. You can get anything Philly steaked now.
The cultural appropriation of Philadelphia. Yeah,
exactly.
I'm cool with it. I mean, you see, look, that genie's out of the bottle. Right. So like you can go to Denny's and get like a Philly, quote unquote, Philly cheesesteak. It's going to be terrible. I would imagine your experience with a jerk chicken cheesesteak was considerably better. That sounds delightful. I would try it, certainly. The problem tends to be not so much because sometimes you'll see people like putting peppers and onions in the cheesesteak, and that's not a traditional. The peppers is not a traditional cheesesteak. The onions tends to be. But sometimes you'll see like weird add-ons. But the problem that most proprietors outside of Philadelphia run into is the bread. So I'm heartened to hear that you got the wrap component, because if you get the bread wrong, your cheesesteak, no matter how good the inside is, it's not going to be a good
correct me if I'm wrong, it's got to be the amoroso roll, correct?
I like an Amorosa roll, or if you really want to level up, like a place like Angelo's in Philly, now that we've completely gone off the rails for this podcast already, a place like Angelo's in Philly, they have like, they make their own bread, and it tends to be like a seeded bread, and it's a little crustier on the outside, but still soft on the inside.
That's the one.
That's the high-end bread.
That's what we're looking for. Listen, I could talk about cheesesteaks truly all day. I could talk about sandwiches all day. Unfortunately, John, that's not what they pay us to do. We do have a job to do here. We're going to dive into an all mailbag episode today. Thank you so much to everyone for emailing in. Shout out to the Open Floor Globe. Please keep those emails coming. Openfloormail@gmail.com. I'm really, really excited about the emails we have today, John. Thank you to everyone for their patience, keeping up with all the changing co-hosts, etc. All the kind words. We appreciate it. Pina, because him and I are not friends in real life, I have not heard from him in weeks. So, I mean, for all I know, you know, he's just showing 86 Celtics highlights to his kid every day. I have no idea because we don't talk.
He's in the wind.
Yeah.
Witness protection. Who knows what's going on with him?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So let's get to, you know, this is an honest, vulnerable podcast. We had an outline snafu today in that I sent it to John, but it went to his spam. So he has no idea any of the questions that are headed his way, which I think is going to make this an even more exciting episode. This email came in late, and I really love this one because I had not considered it, but it's interesting. This one comes from Gabe Gonzalez. I'm assuming no relation because his name is spelled differently than yours. Mm-hmm. Gabe writes in, "Hey guys, thank you so much for the amazing content. I'm a longtime listener and wish it were as an everyday podcast /video. They're not paying us enough to do this every day. But I understand there's more to life than us Open Floor fans wanting more. We appreciate you, Gabe. Thank you so much for writing it." Gabe says, "Since Draymond wants a max extension, which may cause some turmoil moving forward, would this Anthony Davis trade solve anything? John, how do you like this fake trade? Anthony Davis plus maybe a pick for Draymond, Poole, and Kuminga. The Warriors don't have to worry about the Draymond and Poole extensions, but they receive a possible top 10 talent and an insane repeating caliber starting five of Curry, Clay, Wiggins, AD, and Looney. The Lakers receive defense, shooting, youth, and players to build on for the future." This trade kind of blew my mind. What do you think, John?
It's a pick outgoing, so it's a pick to the Warriors.
That's what he says, but you know, we can move the picks around the board.
I hate to be the cold water on the hot take fake trade, but do we know that the salaries match up? Does this work under the trade machine?
I would assume this works. Draymond is playing at a high enough salary. I didn't run it through the. Okay. I didn't crunch the numbers, but I think we could get there salary wise.
You know, trades that you like for both sides. I think I hate this for both sides.
Oh, really?
I don't know that I like this because Draymond works, you know, in a vacuum in Golden State. Part of the reason why Draymond works so well in Golden State is because, you know, a lot of the times it's personality driven, right? Like I did this piece for my former employer about NBA coaches and how little we know about what they actually contribute or don't contribute because we don't have like a lot of metrics to measure with them. Whereas with players, we have a zillion different metrics and ways to measure. But I had a long conversation with Steve Kerr about his job, and he had said that he thinks that coaches in the NBA should be called managers in the same way that they are in soccer, because he thinks the vast majority of his job is managing personalities. And I think Draymond's an excellent example, right? Like he knows how to deal with Draymond. Steph knows how to deal with Draymond. Clay is Clay and is pretty easygoing as it is. They just all work together. I wonder how that would work if you unplug Draymond and plug him in with LeBron in LA. And then, you know, I like Poole and it was Kuminga too, right? Are they products of their environment or are they able to like really carry a team when they go to LA? Ostensibly, if you're excising Anthony Davis, you want them and need them to step up. And I don't know that they're quite at that level yet. So I don't know that I'm thrilled about this. What do you think?
I do think it would be a fantastic trade for the Warriors. I think they're probably a little nervous about playing Poole. I think we saw him deeper into that postseason run lose some of the effectiveness he had. Kuminga, yeah. I think, is still ultimately an unknown quantity. The irony is the Lakers would finally get someone willing to play center who's good at it, and Draymond, Anthony Davis, clearly just not interested in playing that position long term. I'm interested in it mostly.
Are you reading from your notes right now? Are you reading?
I keep looking at the trade because of how much it intrigues me. I have the email open on my phone.
All right, I just wanted to make sure because I think this needs to be like a one-to-one scenario because I'm flying top of the dome here. You know, so if you have notes, that feels
noted,
inequitable.
Like cheating. Yeah. As Michael Pino will tell you, I don't make a lot of notes for this show.
Right. Fantastic.
The reason I like this trade is because of a tweet someone sent during the finals that was a screenshot of Draymond on his microphone, and the caption was like, yeah, sorry I played terribly in game 4, but I just saw LeBron opened up another school. Absolutely commendable, my brother. And
that's good.
I do like the idea of seeing Draymond in a different environment for the reason you said. Can he thrive without playing with amazing shooters and Steph and Clay? Can he thrive playing for a different coach? Can he thrive playing off a different superstar? We know him and LeBron are close. Do I think this makes the Lakers better? I'm not sure. I still think they're at their best when AD and LeBron kind of have that symbiotic relationship going. I do like the idea of the Lakers trying to make a move that brings in some young talent that can grow. I think the thing with Poole I like is young, but a little bit established. Kuminga, I don't know that he helps kind of their problem, which is they haven't been able to find two-way players to put around LeBron and AD, guys who can defend and shoot, which is why I'm not a big fan of their offseason. So I think ultimately I do side with you, John. I don't think the Lakers should make this trade, even though I think it could be interesting for Golden State. But I like where Gabe's head is at. I think it's an interesting thought exercise. Specifically, what could the Warriors get for Draymond, and is there anything the Lakers could do with AD, short of a Kevin Durant trade, that would make them better? I think those are interesting things to consider.
Yeah, I mean, I understand why you'd want to shake up the Lakers. From the Warriors' perspective, if it ain't broken, it's not. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not trying to solve for a problem that doesn't seem to be there. They just want another championship. All is well in the Bay. Like, look, on paper, sure. Would that be an upgrade for them because it's Anthony Davis? Yeah, but also Anthony Davis has had a lot of injury problems. And again, you know, they just keep holding championship parades in the Bay Area. I'm good.
The Draymond situation will be interesting to keep an eye on. I think you max him. You pay the luxury tax. The owners have certainly made enough money there with these deep playoff runs. But it'll be interesting to see if they try to get him under the max, how that plays out. I think he's obviously incredibly valuable to their success. People might say he had a bad game or two in the finals. They obviously don't win the finals without him. It really is just a perfect mix. That team is a perfect mix, and I think removing one ingredient could have some serious consequences there. But I'm with you. I think they should run it back, but there's definitely, I think, a little bit of a financial consideration to what they do moving forward.
Yeah. Money is always a thing. Yeah.
Let's get into this. The subject for this email was literally mailbag question for the dog days. So shout out to you, Gavin, understanding where we are at this point in the off season. Gavin writes in, "Hey, Rohan and the rest of the crew. My name is Gavin. I'm a newer listener to the show. Been enjoying the summer content and figured I would try to throw a mailbag question your way. See if I'm able to generate some differing opinions from you guys." All right, Gavin, let's see what you got. "There will be 8 players this upcoming season trying to make their second All-Star team after making their first. Ja Morant, Zion Williamson, Andrew Wiggins, DeJounte Murray, Jarrett Allen, LaMelo Ball, Darius Garland, and Fred VanVleet. Out of those 8, I guess he has Zion in there even though he didn't play last year. He is technically trying to make his second All-Star game. Out of those 8, how many would you be willing to pick to repeat on next year's teams?" So just to run down that list again for you, John, it's John Morant.
Let's go one by one.
Yeah.
And then,
yeah. All right, yeah, let's do that.
My brain will never be able to hold all 8 at the same time.
Those days are over. Let's start with Ja. Do you think Ja makes it back to the All-Star team next season?
Absolutely. Perennial all-star. The guy's amazing. Yes. He is that third year step. It like was so bad. You know what? I always liked Ja Morant. I loved him coming out of college. I thought he was going to be an impact player. You could see the athleticism right away. My problem, and I'm doing that in quotes because it wasn't much of one. I was worried about his efficiency and his shooting, and he answered that times a million this year. I mean, he really took that leap from a very good, young, promising player who could be one of the next stars in the league to already a star. And now the next thing is, could he be like the face of the league in like a year or two? And that could very well happen. He's incredible.
I'm with you. One of the most fun electric players in the league. I think as long as he's healthy, he's going to be in the All-Star game. I think every year of his career for the foreseeable future. The next one's a good one. Zion Williamson. I think he gets back in.
Are we talking just for this year or just eventually? What was the question specifically?
This upcoming season.
I'm going to say no. We don't know. There's so much we don't know about him. I don't know what kind. I mean, you know, he was maybe healthy enough to play, but then they didn't want to play him. And then you've got videos of him dunking, but then also he looks large. And then, you know, is he healthy? And, like, what's his weight going to be? And does he actually want to play in New Orleans or does he want out? Like, how many games is he going to be on the floor? There's so many questions around Zion that if it's just a... is Zion a good player and you can promise me he's going to play, then yes, of course. But because of all the unknowns, I wouldn't be confident in it.
Here's what I'll say. Here's what I do know. When he plays, the guy's incredible. I believe in his second season, he was the first player ever to average that many points on at least 60% shooting from the field. Just remarkable efficiency. I knew he was going to be good. But even his rookie year, when it took him so long to finally start playing, I couldn't believe how quickly he became such a good scorer. And especially when you think about it, like, he's not like a great ball handler. He doesn't really have a position. The team spacing was not perfect. And yet time and time again, he finds a way to score. I'm with you. There are certainly questions around him, but I think he's going to play. And I think he's going to be an all-star because I think he's going to knock this next guy out too. I'm feeling good about Zion this season, though.
Before you move on to him, the other thing because of all the questions that I just outlined, that gives me pause. But the other thing that gives me pause is the conference, right? It's tougher. Like, it's tough to make, like, if he's not out there playing all the time, it's going to be tough to just, like, eke in. Whereas in the Eastern Conference, you know, we've seen in the past, you know, like Embiid have a season where he's missed a chunk of games, but who are you putting in?
Of course,
Embiid,
it's come down to Embiid.
Right. I mean, all roads lead back to one specific place. But in this instance, I'm saying like he really needs to be out there because there's no gimmies in the West.
Well, to your point, Gavin brought up a bunch of people who didn't make it last year that have a great chance to make it this season, including Damian Lillard, Kawhi Leonard, Paul George, and Anthony Davis, all of whom play in the West. But frankly, all of whom who I think have similar injury questions compared to Zion, some of who have built in rest in a way that Zion doesn't necessarily have. So it'll be interesting. This next guy, I think this is going to be an obvious answer, but maybe not considering what happened in the playoffs, Andrew Wiggins.
Yeah. You know, he caught a lot of heat for last year making it. I mean, like I say, like,
I mean, he didn't just make it all-star starter.
Yeah. I mean, like, let Andrew Wiggins live, right? And by the way, I think it was important and notable that Andrew Wiggins played extremely well in the finals, right? I mean, like, there's a case to be made that he was their second best player during the finals. Mm-hmm. Like, he really was everything that we thought back in the day when he was taken first overall that Wiggins could be, but we hadn't really seen. Yet another example of environment mattering, not messing around with Golden State if you don't have to, because it just the pieces work there.
Everyone should try to play with Steph. Everyone should try to play with Steph.
Yeah, if you can play in Golden State, you should go do that. That being said, tough. It's tough, right, for Andrew Wiggins. He's not like – there's still that like little bit of a stigma from his Minnesota days. Then people go, oh, you know, how much is he drafting off of Steph and the Warriors and that whole tradition? I think he's going to have another really good season. If I had to pick, I'd probably say not again.
I'm saying not again, especially because I think Clay is going to be healthy to start the season, which he wasn't last year. Right. which I think he's going to take away some shots and shine from Wiggins. And if, you know, Clay has a good year, there's going to be a big sentimental push to get him back in the game. You know, I mentioned Kawhi, PG, Dame. All those guys are going to be in the mix this year in a way they weren't last year. So, sorry, Andrew Wiggins, you're out. All right, this next one is interesting because this player switched conferences. DeJounte Murray.
Yeah, I really like DeJounte Murray. He's supremely, supremely talented. I like the conference switch for him. I wonder about the fit. What do you think about the new fit?
I just wrote about this today because I handed out some off-season grades. If people are interested, they love, can check that out on SI.com. Yes. I don't love the fit. I have no doubt about DeJounte Murray's talent. I think he's an incredible player. I wish the Spurs had kept him, frankly. It's sad to me that it's better for them to tank than to keep a player like DeJounte. I'm just curious how much he's actually going to have the ball in his hands playing next to Trae Young, who's going to have to make a massive adjustment to the way he plays. And the spacing, I think, is going to be a little bit weird at times. I'm going no on DeJounte Murray, I think. I think that I don't know that he's going to have the numbers to get him in. And, you know, I think it's going to be a weird fit playing next to Trae.
He's obviously a really good basketball player, but I like the conference for him. But I do, yeah, I wonder about Trae, like being next to Trae Young, because Trae Young is such a high usage player.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't have the ball and you're not allowed to do as many things as you did previously, then your numbers are going to decline. It doesn't mean you're not having a good season or that you're not contributing to your team. And I think the Hawks are probably a much better team with him. I just wonder if the numbers will reflect that. So I'm going to say no to.
This next one, Jarrett Allen. Mm-hmm. I think Jarrett Allen's going to make it.
You go.
I like Jarrett Allen. I'm going to go he makes it.
Look, he had a really good season. His counting stats are ridiculous. A lot of the time, that's enough to just get you through. I wasn't sold on Jarrett Allen as a big contributor in Brooklyn. For whatever reason, he works in Cleveland, and that's the other thing. Like, is that repeatable? Because like the front court rotation, Cleveland is just so. I mean, like we're in 2022.
I've never seen John so stressed before trying to figure out Cleveland's front court.
I watched for nerd purposes, because I'm in addition to loving the NBA, I'm also in some very, very nerdy, very competitive, very intricate fantasy basketball leagues. So I ended up watching a lot of Cleveland Cavaliers games last year. And to my delight and surprise, they were good and fun to watch, but in a weird, quirky way that like is sort of anathema to the way that basketball is played in the NBA right now, right? Because they do have this front court rotation of bigs that they've got, like they've got Evan Mobley and they've got Lauri Markkanen and like Kevin Love's back from the dead. And then on top of that, you've got Jared Allen anchoring that front line and being out there a lot. And you've got this four-man rotation that should not work on paper, but somehow works. I wonder if that's repeatable. From a counting stats standpoint, I think he does it. I'll say that he does go, but I have my reservations about that rotation, especially because Evan Mobley is a monster, and you need to, like, he's the focus of that team along with Darius Garland, and like, can Jared Allen eat enough while that's
interesting.
Growing and developing?
The way I look at it is I think Bam Adebayo is going to make it, and I think Embiid is not going to make it when he misses like 26 games with a stomach bug or something like that.
Wounding me. Hurting me already.
And actually, honestly, I'm switching my answer. I think Allen's out. I thought about this for a little bit more. I think Embiid, Bam are going to make it, and I think it's going to be hard for them to get. I think the Mobley thing, you're right. I think if the Cavs do get a second All-Star, I think there's a better chance it's Mobley.
Mobley's so good. He's so fun to watch. Before we move on to the next guy, can I ask, can we have a quick sidebar here?
Please.
As I was going into that very stressed out rant about the Cleveland Cavaliers front court,
literally
rotation,
like rubbing your tie, I'd never seen that before. Yeah.
Yeah. I revealed that I'm basically like a Dungeons and Dragons player, but only for fantasy basketball.
Yeah.
And you were shaking your head at me. Was that an admonishment? Are you admonishing me being a fantasy basketball player?
I'm not a fan of fantasy sports in general, and I think fantasy basketball is particularly painful. And it's not the fact that
didn't I try to draft you into a league before?
I think, and I said no pretty quickly. Yeah. And not only it'd be one thing if you were like, I'm in a competitive fantasy basketball league, but I believe you described it as multiple intricate fantasy basketball leagues.
Yeah. One of the leagues is a league of our design that has a salary, it's salary cap based.
Yeah, sorry, this is ridiculous.
The rules for it are pages and pages and pages that were drafted by the league's founding fathers, one of which is me, that took us weeks to complete. It was like basically doing a CBA for this league.
Imagine if you had spent that time on literally anything else. Anyway, moving on. I'm going to group these next three guys together, actually.
All right, do it.
Because I think it's interesting to do so. LaMelo Ball. Mm-hmm. Darius Garland and Fred VanVleet.
Are you doing the grouping because
they're all Eastern Conference guards? Yeah.
Eastern Conference? Okay. That makes sense for the grouping. Man, that's tough. I mean, I think of the three, LaMelo is probably the easiest answer.
LaMelo is my safest bet there.
I'd say he's my safest bet. Okay, let's do that. Let's go safest bet in order. LaMelo, because of the name and also because of the numbers, those aren't going anywhere. And you know he's got that delightful commercial with his father, mm-hmm. Where he says nothing my son can't do, and he says that's a fact. Gets me every time. Love it.
It's pretty good.
Don't remember the product, but I enjoyed it. I think it's a phone company. I would say, you know what, probably Garland second. I love Fred VanVleet. I think he's an incredible player, but also like in terms of. Whose star is on the rise?
Yeah. If Siakam has a big first half next year.
Right. What role you're playing on your team, what your numbers are going to look like. I think Garland's role and numbers are pretty easily repeatable. And with VanVleet and the Raptors, they're like by committee most of the time, right? I mean, like they have mm-hmm. some really talented players. But you mentioned Siakam. I think like Fred VanVleet falls in the same category. They're both stars. I don't know that they're superstars, right? So I think FVV probably is the longest shot of those three.
I think I'm not to upset Gavin, who was hoping to generate some differing opinions, but I'm
agreeing
with you there.
Then.
Yeah. I like LaMelo a lot. I think he's almost definitely going to make it. I think Garland and VanVleet are a little bit on edge. I think I like him with you. Garland has a good chance. I do think there was a little bit of like a Cleveland push last year because the game was in Cleveland. I mean, a couple guys... Beal, I think, has a chance to make it this year. He could bump one of the guards. A name we have not discussed much in a while on this podcast, but who theoretically is always a threat to make the All-Star game, is Kyrie Irving.
Yeah, but that's a good point. Like, if you look at the guards for the Eastern Conference last year, a lot of them were out of commission, right? I mean, they weren't in the mix. You didn't have Kyrie. You didn't have, you know, Ben Simmons wasn't around. I'm probably forgetting other people. Yeah. No, but I mean, like, he's just in the mix, right? I mean, he's somebody
sure.
who could potentially
Absolutely.
Steal your spot. I laugh at it, too, but let's not forget that he was a multi-time All-Star.
All-NBA. All-NBA.
All-NBA, too, yeah. So yeah. There are other impediments for those guys that all, like, now, if everybody is healthy in the East and everybody is playing, I mean, like, you know, James Harden, what's that look like this season? He's fit, at least. Maybe he has a bounce-back season, so who knows?
All possible. We're getting a late breaking Shams tweet here. Mm. Oh, okay. Well, this will go into... oh, my God. I just got an email with the subject line with something about Enes Kanter going on the news, and I don't even want to know what that's about. But we're getting a Shams tweet here mid-recording, John, that I think is worth... hitting, also based on an email we received. So let's get into this tweet from Shams. In a meeting with Nets owner Joe Tsai, Kevin Durant reiterated his trade request and informed Tsai that Tsai needs to choose between Durant or the pairing of general manager Sean Marks and coach Steve Nash, sources say.
Wow.
We got an email that I wanted to hit on the show. From Bobby Marisco. Bobby wrote in saying, it could be easy for some people to write off the Nets, but what if they actually kept everyone together? Could they actually be good? And I started to wonder, are we maybe somehow sleeping on the Nets? Is there a scenario in which Katie and Kyrie are still on the team and they're in fact very good, you know, with Simmons coming back, I like some of the signings they made this summer. Royce O'Neal, I think, is a good pickup for them. But let's talk about this Shams suite. This is interesting. I don't understand how he reiterating a trade request, but then also asking him to choose between himself and...
Yeah. So I'm wondering how you interpret the language of that tweet, specifically, not just saying reiterating the trade request, but so I wonder if that means, hey, if you choose me, I'll rescind the trade request. It must, in order for him to not choose Nash and Marks. But the language of the pairing of Nash and Marks, does that mean that if they uncouple and just get rid of one, that would do it for KD?
It sounds to me like he wants both of them gone, which is crazy to think about considering Nash was seemingly the handpicked coach by KD and Kyrie.
That part to me is fascinating because Nash, when he was a consultant with the Warriors and KD was there, they were tight, they were thick, mm-hmm. and it looked like exactly what you said, that was the handpicked coach, and now all of a sudden that's it?
Man, oh man. And the thing is, now that this story is out there, if you're the Nets, how can you get rid of Marks and Nash in the wake of a report like this and not look like the weakest organization in the league? I mean, I understand that teams do this kind of stuff all the time. I mean, they got rid of Kenny Atkinson already, but are you going to get rid of a second coach and the GM who frankly saved you from an abyss? I mean, I wrote about this. The fact that Sean Marks put them in position to sign KD and Kyrie in the first place was nothing short of a miracle, considering they had no picks, no assets. Like, he somehow engineered both enough attractive pieces to trade for James Harden and also the cap space to sign KD and Kyrie. This is a weird one to me. I don't understand how you either want to trade or you don't. You either say I'll stay, but you have to get rid of these guys, or you say I want to trade. This is a weird one. I just don't see how they can get rid of Nash and Marks without looking ridiculous now.
The point that you made about Marks, too, being the one who assembled the team that KD wanted assembled is also a good one. I know that it doesn't feel this way for Nets fans right now, and probably the Nets organization is looking at it, and it can't be easy days over there. However, I think the Nets are in a good spot. I think exactly what you said, that we might be sleeping on the Nets a little bit as currently comprised, and KD doesn't have a ton of leverage here beyond, I don't want to be here, you have to move me, because he is under contract for what? He has 4 more years, right?
Mm-hmm. He signed a 4-year extension that hasn't even started.
So he's got a 4-year deal. You've got a healthy Ben Simmons. You mentioned Royce O'Neal. They've got some nice pieces around. Kyrie is ostensibly going to be there for the entire season. I would want to see what that looks like while I'm exploring trade opportunities. I wouldn't tell him absolutely not no, but I would tell him what the Sixers told Ben Simmons last year, which is, we're not going to just trade you for nothing. We're going to wait until we get the best possible deal for us. In the interim, we would like you to come and play. Now, Ben Simmons decided to go and take his ball and go home. I don't think KD is willing to go and sit out for an entire season the way that Ben Simmons did. And I certainly don't think that he'd be willing to take a hit for 4 years. So I'd say, look, man, come back, play. We'll see if we can accommodate you. If we get the haul we're looking for, great. And in the interim, who knows if you hit on something and all of a sudden that changes, right? I mean, like, I was listening to a podcast, and apologies to whichever podcast it was. Maybe it might have been a crossover with Mannix and Beck, where they were talking about, you know, back in the day when Kobe had demanded a trade and thought he had played his last game for the Lakers, and there was all this talk about him going to the Bulls, and everybody thought it was a foregone conclusion and the whole thing was over, right? That never materialized. They ended up patching it up. He wins another ring with the Lakers. He's an all-time great. He doesn't go anywhere. All I'm saying is, stuff can change.
I agree. And going through their roster this year, it's like they lost Bruce Brown, they lose Andre Drummond, but they bring back Nick Claxton. I think O'Neal gives them some size, which they missed last year in that series against the Celtics. If Simmons plays, I mean, KD, Kyrie, O'Neal, Simmons, whoever you kind of work in as the fifth, maybe it's Joe Harris some nights, maybe it's Nick Claxton some nights. It's interesting. TJ Warren, I think, was a smart, sensible pickup. So there are reasons to kind of keep this together. But if the idea is you have to get rid of Nash and Marks, I this is speculation on my part. I do wonder how much of this has to do with the way they handled Kyrie. I don't know how well I think, like you mentioned, Steve Nash was thick with KD. I don't know what his relationship with Kyrie is like. I think Marks obviously was, I think, part of the group that made the decision to keep Kyrie away for roughly the first half of the season, first third of the season. How much of that is affecting KD's reported thinking here? I mean, again, Shams, I don't think there's any reason. We believe, we trust his reporting, but certainly there's some room for interpretation here. So I wonder how much of this has to do, again, just stemming back to the way the organization handled Kyrie and how that sat with KD over the last few months.
I mean, there's a lot to unpack here, and I also want to thank Shams for contributing to the mailbag in real time.
Yes.
Because this is a really good one. I mean, like, from a managerial standpoint, from an ownership standpoint, on the way, I could understand why some people who are listening might be like, you're crazy, give KD whatever he wants, he's KD. Mm-hmm. It's just a coach, you can replace a coach, which to a certain extent I believe. And then, you know, the general manager, you know, you elevate somebody else. Okay, maybe. But organizationally, like, are you uprooting that entire thing and then giving the keys to somebody who there's no guarantee that in 6 months he might not just want out again anyway, and you've now, like, you know, uprooted your front office and your bench for a guy who doesn't want to be there. And for all the points that you outlined, this whole thing kind of got stitched together by Mark. Yes, of course, it requires Kyrie and KD to get together on the side and decide they want to build that team. But you still need, with the assets you have, to go out and, like, surround them. Now, it didn't look good last year for a whole host of reasons. I still think it could work. So I would tell them, thanks. We appreciate your input. Camp starts on X date in September. We hope to see you there.
Yeah. I mean, it's tough because, like you mentioned, I don't think Nash is, like, so accomplished that you don't consider moving on from him.
Yeah.
Marks, I think, is a different story. I don't think you move on from Marks just yet. Another thing is, it's like, you bring in a coach. Let's just say KD doesn't want that guy gone in another year.
I'm less concerned with the coach aspect than I am with the double dip, and the double dip being, like, the top of the organizational food chain in terms of personnel. Like, if you're going to, if he was just saying, I want a new coach, all right, we can make that happen. But you basically want to have full control over the organization writ large, and that's when I take my leave.
Yeah. The headline on the story is really good. Durant tells Nets owner to trade him or fire Nash, comma Marks. Tough. I just hope they resolve this. I don't, like, it's not that I think KD looks bad, but it's just, I just want to see him hoop. I want to see him play for a good team. I just, I'm tired of this drama. I'm tired of the Nets. I think Sean Marks has done generally a really good job there. I mean, he put Harden, Kyrie, and KD together. And that's a ridiculous team that was probably going to win the finals had they not had, you know, Harden playing on one leg and Kyrie out entirely. It's just a really crazy set of circumstances that have put him in this position. The only team kind of really dealing with this, the fallout from a vaccine mandate, etc. I just don't know how much you keep capitulating, even to someone like Kevin Durant, where you could definitely make an argument for why you should do it, but I just feel like you're going to open yourself up to a new set of consequences every time you say yes to him.
Just from a basketball perspective, if I'm the Nets, I want to see what full season of Kyrie, KD, and now Ben Simmons looks like together, because that could work. That could work, and you could, I mean, like, especially defensively. Look, Ben Simmons has... I've spent
One of the best on-ball defenders in the league. One of the best defensive player of the year level talent.
100%. I have spent untold podcast hours bemoaning what he doesn't do well. What he does do well is push it in the open floor, pass, rebound, and play defense like a dervish who could switch 1 through 5. And you put him next to KD, who is one of the best defenders in the league as well. And now, man, that could be really something. And also, you don't need Ben Simmons to shoulder a large portion of the offensive output because you've got those two other guys there to do that. That could be something. Mm-hmm. I just want to push back on one quick thing. Counterpoint to you saying you're tired of the drama with the Nets. As both not a fan of the Nets and a content producer, pro drama, pro Nets.
That's
drama.
True. I take that back. As someone who said we were desperate for NBA news on our last episode, at least we got some. So I'll thank them for that. But just the longer this drags out, let me say, I like the drama, but the longer it drags out, the more depressing it gets. The sadder it gets for sure. So at least give us something spicier. At least give us the actual trade, something. So we'll definitely keep our eye on that. That's an interesting development. Thank you, Shams, for dropping that mid-recording and not a few minutes after.
Yeah.
Let's move on here. We got, again, a lot of good emails for this episode. This is an interesting one here. This one comes from Zhang. I'm really sorry if I'm pronouncing your name incorrectly. Please feel free to email me back with the correct pronunciation. Dear Love Island Rohan, bestseller Chris, and the Green Pod Michael. Longtime listener since Sharp and Gulliver times. Love the show and you all have amazing chemistry to keep the off-season interesting. Thank you. Thank you so much for this email. Zhang goes on to say, I was so excited to hear Rohan commenting on NBA 2K, which I did in our most recent episode. His question for us is, I don't think we have to go this deep into it, but this is, I do like this question. Who are your top 2K picks at each position? And who are your top three surprise picks that are not common for fans of only the current NBA, but also historically? John, I'm just going to open this up. Who are some of your favorite players to hoop with in 2K over the years?
Yeah, I would have to go back because I loved 2K. I have since fallen off a little bit, sort of aging out.
I haven't picked up a copy in 4 years.
Yeah, I'm sort of aging out of getting a new copy on a new console every time, right? Like,
and your fantasy leagues keep you so busy. How
my fantasy,
even...
you, it, they're really intricate. They take a lot of work.
Yes, clearly.
I will say one quick thing about that league. It had, for a time, in addition to having several NBA journalists in it, it had for a time somebody who was for a very long time an NBA executive who is now doing other things NBA related, whose name I will keep out of it, but that person was in our league, never won the league. That's how tough
it
is.
That seems like a conflict of interest. That seems like a massive...
It seems like it, but that's why we're not going to mention his name. All right, so players that I like to hoop with, I mean... You know, in the aughts, always, you know, Kobe, LeBron, you know, that group, like that era was always Chris mm-hmm. Bosh, Dwayne Wade. Those guys were always super fun. And, you know, going back a second, like the Iverson era, late era Iverson was near and dear to my heart. You?
Oh, my God. So many. Peja Stojakovic, early NBA Live era. My brother and I would run Kings Mavericks, and I would just try to go off for 50 with Peja. One time, I was like, I'm trying to score every single point with Austin Crozier tonight, and I got it for like 70.
Nice.
Big Austin Crozier guy. John Sammons. I used to put in work with John Sammons. A really, really talented NBA pro who I think would be better if he played today. Really liked him. Josh Smith. I was an early adopter of Josh Smith at center.
People forget.
Loved running Josh Smith at center. I think my most recent 2K team that I really put a lot of effort in was a nucleus of Paul George. I brought this up on the pod somehow before. Paul George, Aaron Gordon, and Marvin Bagley. That was a lot of fun. Won MVP with Paul George, but I used to love playing with the early aughts Kings, Bobby Jackson, Peja Vlade, Doug Christie.
Fun
Those
teams.
Were some of my favorite teams to use. Yeah. And then obviously Dwayne Wade. I think the last 2K I own still has Dwayne Wade in the game, so I try to score with him every time down the floor.
Maybe you and I need to dust it off a little bit. I've since gone, you know, like get a game together or something like that. I've since gone the other way. I am regressing into my childhood where now I'm like picking up a bunch of like, you know, 8-bit, 16-bit, 64-bit nice. Games, things like that. Like NBA Jam is an all-time classic, and like it's so simple.
NBA Jam.
Yeah, so like that kind of thing is still in the regular rotation for me, but maybe I need to get back into 2K.
I mean, if you ever invite me to your house, maybe we could play some video games, but you know, it's
open
cool.
invitation.
It's cool.
You come whenever you like.
I want to get to, this is the last email I want to get to on the show today, John, and it's a really, really good one. Subject line is the big question, and it really is a big question. This one comes from valued Open Floor Globe member. You're all valued, but shout out to Hedda, who forced me to bring back the Love Island Minute, and we've been getting a ton of Love Island emails. I'm not going to bore John with it today. I've also missed the last three episodes, so we'll hop back to Love Island when the season ends. But this email comes from Hedda. Hello, Rohan, Chris, and or potential guest host. Thank you, Hedda, for accepting John into the Open Floor family.
I feel loved.
I've been wanting to ask this question since I started listening in December, but figured I would wait until the off season as it is a pretty big question. So here it goes. How does one pick a basketball team? Hear me out. I'm not from the US nor Canada, nor do I have family there. The only Norwegian, or at least the only one born in Norway, to ever play in the NBA was some random guy who played 1 year for the Clippers in 89-90. And by played, I mean 10 minutes total during the season. What I'm trying to say is I have no previous loyalties to any NBA team. I picked my team by going, this podcaster is a Knicks fan, he's a cool guy, I'll be a Knicks fan. But I question if there could have been a better way. Throughout the year, I started giving away teams to people I know. I'm pretty happy with the choices I've made in doing so. I'm especially proud of getting my 14-year-old sister so invested in the Grizzlies that she regularly comes home from school telling me about how she absolutely roasted the basketball takes of the boys in her class. Love that. But it has made me really overanalyze how one picks a team. I just really like your input on it because I do think it is an interesting exercise. Also, if you guys had to pick new teams that had no prior loyalties, which teams would you pick? Love that little question in there, too. Much love, Hedda, now of Australia. John, this is a fantastic question. This is one of my favorite emails we've ever gotten. I don't know where you want to go with them first, but I get, if you're a Hedda right now, go for it, John. Go for it.
All right. So I actually kind of have this same issue going on in my life right now for Premier League teams because, you know, I'm not European. Like, I don't have a team.
The Premier League. That's the Premier
League. Premier League, right. I don't pronounce it properly. I do enjoy watching it. It's back. But every year I'm like, I'm going to really, like, dig down and pick a team, and I never do. I just end up watching it. Mm-hmm. So I understand that problem. For basketball, I think for a lot of us, or at least for East Coasters, it tends to be provincial, right? So, like, grew up in Philly. I'm Philly sports across the board. That has not worked out for me more times than it has worked out. Being a Sixers fan is it means being heavily, heavily invested and also almost always disappointed and or angry. The good part is that we all get to do it together. The bad part is that multiplies our collective mania because we all play off of each other. I would welcome you with open arms into Sixers fandom. I don't know that I'd recommend it for you. I think that there are probably easier existences. You had mentioned that you became a Knicks fan because somebody was a podcaster, was a Knicks fan. That is also a tortured existence. You could have picked a much easier life for yourself. I would not recommend the Knicks. Yeah. So maybe we can crack it this way. If I had to pick, and you know, you talk through it about how you became a Heat fan. But if I had to pick a team that wasn't the Sixers, which one would I pick? I'd have to give that some thought.
So I think I'm ready with my answer. So I grew up in South Florida, hence why I became a Heat fan. They had such good teams early in my childhood. Alonzo Mourning, probably my first favorite basketball player. Loved Zoe. And then, of course, 2003, they draft Dwayne Wade, and it just goes up like a rocket ship from there. This is a team I watch almost every night, no matter who they're playing. This is a team that's it has some history, but it's not historically great. At the same time, they have one of the better players in the NBA. They're up and coming. They have a young, exciting core. They play an exciting brand of basketball. It's the team I would pick if I had to pick a new team. I think Hedda should be a fan of the Denver Nuggets. Now, hear me out.
Okay.
They have Nikola Jokic, international superstar, a great personality for, frankly, his lack of personality. Is just a goofy, fun-loving guy who wants to ride horses. They have Jamal Murray, I think one of the more exciting players in the NBA. What he did during the last time he was in the playoffs was thrilling in the bubble in 2020. They made some really good moves this offseason. They play an up-and-down, fast, offense-first style of basketball. Jokic is going to give you at least one highlight a night with his passing. I think they have good fans who, while they might get carried away with Jokic, they are not doing, and I say this with all due respect and love to Sixers, Knicks, they're not doing kind of the annoying East Coast, over-the-top, threatening, you know, riding in the street style type of fandom. They're just good, normal, well-adjusted people. So if I had to pick a team, it'd be the Nuggets because of how much I love Jokic. And also, cool uniforms, cool classic uniforms, good colors. Denver's a lovely city. My pick is the Nuggets for Hedda.
I like all those reasons. I think for me to crack the case, I think a lot about like which teams I like watching on League Pass, and that almost invariably comes back to individual players who are hyper dynamic. If it was a total immersive experience, if I'm living in that city, if I'm going to those games in those buildings, it would be a little bit different. Then I'd probably pick like the Portland Trailblazers because that experience, yeah, going to a game
lovely
in Portland,
team. Yes.
Is awesome.
Awesome.
They have a great, great experience, and obviously they have Dame Lillard. But
good
I think
fans, good jerseys. Yeah.
Yeah, great fans, great jerseys. The whole of Portland experience is really awesome. But if I'm picking just for the team from a distance and the players that I'm watching, it's probably an easy solve for me. I'm going to go with Giannis and the Bucks. Because it's a normal, as you said, it's a normal fan base that you can get behind with a guy who's like an otherworldly player. Or if you're going to go up and coming, like you had mentioned, then for me, it's Ja and the Grizzlies, because not only do you have Ja, but you have Triple J and Bane, like that whole group. And they're on
she
the rise.
Talk to her sister about them. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, like, and just saying like, I'm throwing my lot in with Ja as he's on like a meteoric rise, and who knows where it's going to go from here. Like, if I'm only watching one guy for the next however many years and it's not going to be Giannis, then it's going to be Ja.
Yeah, I think those are great picks. And I think, Hedda, I think what we've shown you is you have a great opportunity to pick a team that's on the rise, pick a small market, a fan base that I think we don't need another Knicks fan. We don't need another Sixers fan. We don't need another Lakers fan. We don't need another Heat fan. Lord knows we don't need another Celtics fan.
Thank you. I'm glad you got to that one, because I was going to say, really, pick any of the 29 teams that are not the Celtics.
Yes. Oh, God. Do not pick the Celtics. But, yeah, I think the Grizzlies, the Bucks, and Nuggets, those are all good picks. Teams that have had some success, but not otherworldly success or not dynasties. I think it'll give you good credibility with basketball fans that you're not just joining the bandwagon of some crazy team. And they all have one of the most exciting stars in the game. So hopefully we're giving you some good options there. Again, my pick would be the Nuggets, but I think the Bucks are a fantastic pick, especially because Giannis is just hard to find a more lovable person than Giannis. Joe Ingles, and you got the Australian connection right there with Joe Ingles, who just recently signed with the Bucks. Although, Hedda, you're Norwegian, you now live in Australia, so that's something to keep in mind. All right, John, I think that'll do it for the emails this week, but I did want to close today's show with a continuing thread from the last time we did this podcast together. Mm-hmm. We discussed how during my time at home, my bar for movies has been so low that I'll watch just about anything. And you gave me a fantastic recommendation that I think you deserve public recognition for. Just a welcome sight for sore eyes, a text from John Gonzalez, unprompted. Mm-hmm. Have you seen Final Score? Let me see if I can get the exact text. Because
get the text. The genesis was we were talking about how low the bar is for you at your parents' house, and also for me when my wife is on the road for work. I'm just sitting here with the dogs. I'll basically throw on anything to have background noise, and I was scrolling through Netflix, and I stumbled upon this movie that I had never heard of, that I did not know existed, and
yes. It
really blew my mind, and it's called Final Score, and like within seconds of starting it, I immediately texted you about it.
It was so good. Wednesday, 1:08 a.m. Eastern Time. Bad movie rec. Final Score on Netflix. Blatant diehard knockoff. Instead of LA skyscraper, it's West Ham during a game. Exact same plot. Dave Bautista as Bruce Willis. Pierce Brosnan involved. Shocking remake. I watched it literally the next day. Someone's face gets stuck into a deep fryer in this movie. It's shockingly violent. There's an absurd plastic surgery plot without giving too much away, but I really cannot recommend it enough if you're looking for a dumb action movie.
It's an incredibly dumb action movie that, for me, the striking part was, you know, instead of the terrorists taking over Nakatomi Plaza or Tower, they take over West Ham Stadium during a game. And the beats are incredibly similar to, you know, instead of Bruce Willis being a cop, Dave Bautista's former special ops, his sidekick, instead of being a cop, is a stadium worker, security guard, and on and on and on. Instead of trying to save his wife, he's trying to save his niece. It's really first
rate. It's like a Mad Libs version of Die Hard.
It is. And absurdly violent. So highly recommend.
Yeah, a very good movie. And that inspired me to give out one more rec for the lovely people of this podcast. I know we've been giving out some book recommendations, but if you're looking for an average movie that'll entertain you any more business than it has entertaining you, you may have heard that there's a new Predator prequel out on Hulu called Prey. That movie was great. But if you're looking for a bad movie that's also great, may I recommend Predators, which is also on Hulu, the 2010 sequel to the movie that stars Adrian Brody. I think Topher Grace from That 70s Show is in it.
Wow.
Walton Goggins. Really good cast. Again, absurdly violent. It involves people who've been dropped on a planet. Like criminals who've been dropped on a planet for the sole purpose of being hunted by predators.
Yeah, that's what happens in that world.
Yeah. So really just good, absurd sci-fi movie. I want to throw that. I'm assuming from your reaction, you have not seen it, John.
I have not seen it. I might work that into the mix.
Yeah.
I've got some bad movie recs for next week when we do this again, because we're gonna run this. But well, if we do it next week might not happen, but in the future, I will plan on being on the Monday pod until Pina comes back. So
yes.
I'll dip into my bad movie mailbag recommendations and trot those out next time.
Don't worry. I keep the MF bad movies on me, so don't worry.
Love it.
That is going to do it for today's episode of Open Floor. Thank you so much to all of our emailers. Please keep those emails coming. openfloormail@gmail.com. John, thank you so much for sitting in the co-host chair. I think we're getting there. You know, I like where this partnership is headed. I think as far as star duos go, you know, we're on the rise too, frankly. I'm just going to say it.
So far, so good. Two-man weave. We appreciate it. Also, check out Sports Illustrated Weekly this week. We've got Pat 40 on to discuss college football realignment and the making of the super conferences with USC and UCLA decamping for the Big Ten. Pat 40, per usual, excellent. Has a lot of really smart, good things to say. And he's just a delight, so I recommend it.
Please do check out Sports Illustrated Weekly, lovely podcast. I know I'm personally going to check out that episode because I want to. The conference realignment stuff in college football is crazy. Excited to see if those pretty boys from USC can hang with the big boys at Northwestern and the Big Ten. Until then, everyone, please keep enjoying the NBA offseason. We'll talk to you soon.
At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.
If you're a facilities manager at a warehouse and your HVAC system goes down, it can turn up the heat, literally. But don't sweat it, Grainger has you covered. Grainger offers over a million industrial-grade products for all your operations, including warehouse HVAC maintenance. And even better, they offer access to experts and fast delivery, so you and your warehouse can both keep your cool. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.